The next case for oral argument would be Ryan Stensland, appellant, versus Harding County, appellee. For the appellant, we have Mr. Robert Morris, an attorney from Belle Fouche. And for the appellee, Harding County, we have Mr. Donald Knudsen, an attorney from Rapid City. With that, Mr. Morris, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Justice of the Court, Madam Clerk, Mr. Knudsen. I represent Ryan Stensland this morning, and our request to you is that you reverse and remand this case back to the Circuit Court for a trial on the issue of damages only. I'll briefly address some of the facts. Back in April, on April 12, 2009, after significant rainfall and snow, the county road in Harding County was washed out. It was completely washed out from roadside to roadside, about 6 foot deep. Harding County was notified of that, and once they were notified, they had the statutory obligation pursuant to 313210 to do something about it. The primary duty under that statute is to repair. There's also a secondary duty, and that is to erect appropriate guards to protect the public. There's also another statute, 3128-6, that indicates that they must comply with appropriate signage under what is referred to as the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control, the MUTCD, which is commonly referred to as the MUT. The county admitted that the MUT manual dictated the type of signs and the barricades and items that needs to be undertaken in order to protect the traveling public pursuant to state law. They were required to have type 3 barricades, which are about 4 foot by 5 foot. They're slats. They're required to have yellow and white reflective tape, and they're required to have a road close sign on them. Also, the MUT manual indicates that prior to the road being closed sign, there should be another sign that says road closed ahead. The county admitted that they did not comply whatsoever with the MUT manual. Instead, what they did was at this area of the washout, they put what I call and what we reference as little sawhorse type barriers. They're about 2 foot high, about 2 foot wide. They're red, black. I don't even think they're reflective. Also, they put some orange cones on either side, small orange cones about a foot high on either side of the washout, and they were not reflective in nature. Now, just east or west of the washout, they put a sign on, a road close sign on one of these little sawhorse barriers, and that was the only signage they had from individuals, public traveling from the west toward the east. About 35 days later, on May 16, 2009, my client, Ryan Stensland, in the evening, about 9:30, was traveling east. He was taking a stepdaughter to meet his sister at a halfway point and for branding the next day. Ryan had, previous to that, or during that day prior to leaving, he had had a discussion with his dad, and his dad said, you know, there was a washout there, you look for detour signs. Ryan's driving along, looking for detour signs, gets to the Ralph area, is where the road actually starts. Does not see any road close signs, does not see any barricades, does not see anything. Continues on, is driving at or below 45 miles an hour, gets to an area where it's somewhat washboardy, and boom. His car impacts the washout, totals his car. He has a comminuted fracture of his leg, has about $47,000 in medical expenses. The case proceeds to the pretrial. At the pretrial, on behalf of Ryan, I made a motion that the violation of the statutes was negligent per se, because the county did not comply with the statutes. They did not repair the road in a reasonable amount of time. They did not properly guard the road under the MUT manual. They did not have proper signage under the MUT manual to give communication to the traveling public. We get to trial, and we put on the our evidence, and the county admitted that the MU2CD, the CD, the MUT manual, applied. Their people were trained on it. They didn't use it. I inquired, why weren't there any Type 3 barricades? We didn't have any. So we used what we had. So there was a clear violation of the statutes regarding protecting the traveling public once the county knew that it had a problem. The other thing is, after 35 days, they still had not repaired this. And by their own admission, this was the second worst washout in the county. They had another washout that was worse, but they had not repaired this after 35 days. So the county highway superintendent, the county employee, everybody agreed that the manual applied, they didn't follow the manual, that they violated the statute. We get to the point where both parties rested their cases. Then I made a motion for judgment as a matter of law, requesting that the court, as a matter of law, direct a verdict on liability for my client. The court declined to do so. And the particular issue is with jury instruction 18. The court, and in the appendix, it's jury instruction 18. The court said, well, I've ruled as a negligence per se, but legal cause, or in the old days, I guess, is proximate cause, is still an issue. So jury instruction 18 indicated that the burden of proof on the plaintiff, which was my client, was that we had to prove that the negligence of the county was the legal cause of the accident. And I objected to that. I said, Your Honor, when we go into the trial and we have this, that we have a violation of a statute, and you could call it a safety statute, then the court's pretrial ruling essentially is it's negligence per se. And when you have negligence per se, that allows the jury to look at that statute, and that determines the standard. It's a little bit different in this case, because in this case, the statute 31-3210 establishes the duty of the county. And even under a negligence per se process, under a safety statute, if the defendant admits violations of the statute and provides no legal excuse for violation of the statute, then there is and should be a directed verdict as a matter of law.
Well, wait a minute. You just jumped from establishes duty to liability as
Correct.
A matter of law. And the court said, well, all right, duty is established if there's a negligence per se. Isn't there still a causation and damages issue? And if you just say liability, that includes causation and damage, and how do you get to that point?
Well, you get to that point, it's my position, and I advocate this. When you look at the elements of negligence, it's duty, breach of duty, legal cause, and damages. Now, the judge ruled that the county was negligent, which means we satisfied the issue of duty, breach of duty, legal cause, and damages. But when he instructed the jury, over my objection and his refusal to grant a judgment as a matter of law by saying that legal cause was still an issue. Legal cause, and my assertion is, legal cause is not and was not an issue. This court has defined legal proximate cause as the harm suffered must be a foreseeable consequence of the act complained of. So the act complained of is a failure to follow the law. No guarding of the, no repair of the washout, no proper signage of the washout, violation of the mandatory signage requirements. And what's the foreseeable ramification of that conduct, exactly what happened. The traveling public, my client, runs into the ditch.
That only shows breach of duty. The things you just ticked off only establish breach of duty. That doesn't say anything about whether that breach was the cause. He might have gone in there because he wasn't paying attention, or there was other allegations here. So I think the problem in this case is the court and counsel use the word liability, they use the word negligence, and we're not always using it with the same concepts in mind. He breached the duty, but isn't there still a causation element?
I say it is for this reason. The county had the affirmative defenses of contributory negligence and assumption of the risk. The county, is that there was a breach of the duty, there was a duty, breach of duty, legal cause, and damages. Now the burden now shifts, and I believe we should have had a directed verdict on the county's liability. Now the burden then shifts to the county to assert and to show that either my client was contributory negligent or assumed the risk. Because if you still have a legal cause issue hanging out there, you don't get to the contributory negligence or assumption of the risk. Because when you go through the analysis, in order to get to contributory negligence, you first have to say, was the defendant negligent? Was it legal cause? So on and so forth. Then you go through the same analysis under the contributory negligence, and was it breach of duty, legal cause, and was it slight or more than slight? And then you have the assumption of risk. So my assertion is we were entitled to a directed verdict as to liability, and then the burden shifts to the defendant to assert contributory negligence and assumption of risk, which brings me to those issues. Again, I move for a directed verdict on contributory negligence and assumption of risk, and asserted there was insufficient evidence for the jury to consider those issues in this particular case. This court has indicated that contributory negligence is conduct for which the plaintiff is responsible amounting to a breach of duty, which alone poses upon persons to protect themselves from injury, in which concurring and cooperating with the actual negligence for which the defendant is responsible contributes to the injury complained of as a proximate cause. Now, the duty is usually fixed by one of three things: statute, ordinance, or common law. And my assertion here is that there was insufficient evidence to submit the issue of contributory negligence to the jury. There was no valid or competent evidence of speed. The county has tried to argue it, but there was no evidence of speed. The deputy sheriff determined speed was not a factor. The county, in its putting on this case, put the stepdaughter on, Victoria, and she made conclusory allegations, or she concluded that he was speeding. It was shown that she thought he was speeding because he was going 45, and she was under the understanding that the speed limit was 35. We had already established that the speed was 45, and there was no indication of speed.
Isn't that a jury question right there? I mean, right there, you got a conflict. That makes it a jury question.
We have conflict, but we don't have competent evidence of conflict. We have Victoria's not an expert. The Highway Patrol looked at the case. The Highway Patrol looked at the case at the request of Deputy Sable, did not make a determination that speed was a factor. In fact, Mr. Bowers, the highway superintendent, testified where the part of the road was washboardy. He himself said he couldn't have been going very fast.
Well, okay, that's just speed, but wasn't there also evidence that he went around the sign from testimony when they were going back, and also that his father told him. In fact, you stated that the road may be out. So doesn't that make it a jury question? And this was a general verdict, so we don't know which of these it looked at.
I understand that, and I don't believe it was a jury question, because I'll address the father. The father indicated that the road had been washed out, does not know if it had been fixed yet, look for detour signs. Okay? So essentially what the father did was place my client in sort of a trap. Look for detour signs. Not seeing any detour signs, he continued. Well, there weren't any signs, and the sign you're talking about is the road closed sign on the sawhorse. That was in the middle left side of the road and had been placed there, but it was down. And there was no evidence that it was up when my client drove by. And that gets back to the MUTCD. The MUT requires these type 3 barricades, which are large. And in the last couple of years, we've seen them all over pier. They're large. They're 3 or 4 slats. They have yellow stripes, white stripes, and the sign is supposed to go on there communicating to the public that the road is closed. None of that was present. So he's driving down the road, and he's not told, don't go down that road. There's a washout. He's told, look for a detour sign. And sure, he grew up in the area, and he had knowledge from his father that there was the possibility of the washout, and he was looking for the signage. The signage that was required by law to be put up by the county, and they failed to do. In my view, this contributory negligence, there is no competent evidence. If the evidence that was submitted in this case substantiates an issue of contributory negligence going to the jury, then contributory negligence probably can go to the jury in any case in South Dakota. Because if he had knowledge and didn't see it, and his dad told him the detour signs, there's got to be context. There's got to be temporal issues that relate to his duty and what he did or did not do. He was driving down a road and had no indication that it was in disrepair. Why did he have no indication that it was in disrepair? Because the county did not follow the law, proper law, with signage. If they had used type 3 barricades, the large barricades with the slats, with the road closed sign on it, put one or two on it, and put sandbags on it, there would not have been a chance for a sign to be laying on the road and failing to communicate to my client or anybody else on the travel on that road that there was a danger lurking ahead. So it's our position that there wasn't a scintilla of evidence that allowed the jury to consider contributory negligence, because there was nothing about speed. There was nothing that there was a sign up and that he saw the sign, and there was nothing to indicate that he did anything wrong. And it kind of goes back to the legal proximate cause issue, is if the county had done what it was required to do by law, my client would not have been put in the position he was placed in, and ultimately in the washout. And then we have the assumption of the risk. And Justice Severson, I've been doing this for 27 years, and seldom do I do special interrogatories, but I might start after this. But I would submit this to you. The assumption of the risk instruction also should have never gone to the jury, because it's a knowing, voluntary self-exposure to known danger, and it's a subjective standard. And it requires actual knowledge. The individual must appreciate the character of the risk, voluntarily accept it with time, knowledge, and experience. If my client If there had been type 3 barricades and my client had gone around those barricades and continued and proceeded on, yes, I would have never taken the case. We wouldn't have got to trial because that's assumption of the risk. But there were no barricades. The county wants to assert that the washouts in some way should give indication that there's a ditch ahead, a barrier. And I see my time is expired.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Morris. Mr. Knudsen, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you. It pleases the court. Clerk. Counsel. The phrase that came to my mind as I was preparing for the argument was, as he was fleeing from a lion, he ran into a bear. Amos 5:19. And in this case, the lion that they're fleeing from, that the plaintiff is fleeing from, the appellant, is the abuse of discretion standard of review. In this case, you need to review the facts in the light most favorable to the verdict, allowing all reasonable inferences in favor of the county in this case. So that's the lion that he's running from. And the bear he's running into is the general verdict. The general verdict, the verdict form that was used in this case, does not allow you to determine how the jury reached the conclusion that it reached. And because we can't determine that, there's no way that they can prove prejudice was caused by the way this case was presented. So, you mentioned, several of you, the facts of the case. This is all about the facts. In fact, when I was writing the brief in this case, I spent page after page after page talking about the facts, which I normally wouldn't do, because it is all about the facts. If there's any substantial evidence in the record that would support giving the causation instruction, by the way, it's just not the law of South Dakota about negligence per se does not create liability. This is Schmidt versus Royer. Quoting Thompson versus Summers, violation of a statute alone is not sufficient to render them liable to the plaintiff before they may be held to respond in damages. It must further appear their violation of the duty placed on them by this rule was a proximate cause of the plaintiff's injury. The burden of proving this is on the plaintiff. That's the case law, and it's cited. That was Schmidt versus Royer. But it in the standard jury instructions, South Dakota pattern jury instructions on statutory violations, in the comments behind each one of them, is this reference. Instructions on legal cause are still necessary even if there's negligence per se. That's the law.
Well, jury instruction comments aren't the law.
But I cited South Dakota Supreme Court
authority.
So the issue of causation, I asked to use exhibits, and I will, because the facts are what is all what this case is all about. So here is a aerial map, and Mr. Morris begged me to give an attribution for creating this, and I will. He did a fine job on it. Mr. Stensland was traveling on this. This is Highway 734 going across the middle of the exhibit. Here's a road that goes north. It's a little town called Ralph, right there at that intersection. You go a little bit further to the east. Yeah, this right here, that is the Carlson Road. It goes north there. This line that goes south, that's a driveway for Mr. Robinson. He testified at trial.
And then just beyond it, somewhere in this neighborhood right here, is where the washout occurs. Right? So Mr. Stensland was traveling from the west to the east. As he passed the Ralph Road, he had the opportunity to go either north or south. If he went south, he could get back over to Highway 79. He could take a detour there. His father told him he might need to. He looked. He didn't see a sign, so he continued, and he came to the Carlson Road. He could have taken a detour there. He could have gone north and still got to Highway 79 there. He didn't do that. He continued on, and he went down. Now, before I get that far, at the Carlson Road, right here, was this road closed sign. These were used at trial, so the jury saw these. This road closed sign was mounted on a barricade. We had the county had Rocky Sarsland to testify at trial. He ran a blade and a maintainer on these roads. Every night after work, he would come and look to see if the signs were still in place and if they were standing. And the Friday night before this accident happened Saturday night, the sign was standing in place at the intersection of the Carlson Road. There was no evidence. In fact, Mr. Stensley testified Saturday, the very next day, after Sarsland saw this standing. It was a beautiful day. There was no evidence of any high wind of any kind that would have blown this over. That was testimony that the jury heard. That's testimony that could go to causation. That's testimony that could go to contributory negligence or assumption of the risk, because maybe that sign was standing when Mr. Stensland drove past it, or maybe he had to swerve to go around it when he went through that intersection, because when they came back after the accident, Mr. Robinson, the guy whose ranch is here, gave him a ride back over to Ralph to meet his father. He broke his leg in the accident. Robinson gave him a ride. He had to swerve around the sign to take it back over. These are poor photographs. They were taken by people who didn't know they'd show up as evidence someday. But this is how the sign was set up originally. This is Robinson's mailbox. And they set the sign on the barricade, big road closed sign, right in the middle of the road. Okay. That got moved later. We don't know who moved it, why they moved it, how they put it up, but we know it was there Friday night before the accident. In front of the... How am I doing on time?
You have about 12 minutes and 22 seconds left.
Look at this. That's the delineator post that we're talking about. That's one of those big orange reflector things on the fence post. Pounded right into the middle of the road. Don't know who did that. We assume it was Mr. Robinson, but he didn't admit to it. But right in the middle of the road. And he drove right over it. That's Mr. Stensland standing here on the... I should reference this. This is Exhibit K. Back here, you can see the road come down. And then this is where the washboard is. The washboard, let's talk about that for just a second. Let me show you one more first. That shows him running right over that delineated post. Now the jury saw this, okay? And then while I'm showing, and then I'll get back to the podium, here's a barricade. There's a reflector right in the middle of it. This is now shown at the bottom of it. At the bottom of the hole, you can see the culvert running through there. This is Exhibit J. And there's one of the legs that held the brace up there. The evidence was that Mr. Bowers, the highway superintendent, said he set this up, this barricade, about 25 to 30 feet away from the washout, out there on the gravel road. It had those little braces holding it up and was secured with a sandbag. If the theory is the wind blew it into the hole, the wind did that. Well, there's no evidence of wind that day. Right? We have Sarsland, the blade operator, saying they were standing the night before this accident. No evidence of wind that day.
And Mr. Bowers testified if it had been the wind that blew it over, it would have just flopped down on the road. It wouldn't have skittered 25 feet into the hole. So the jury could conclude from that evidence, maybe Mr. Stensland pushed that into the hole with his car. That's a question of fact that the jury was allowed to decide. The washboard, Mr. Stensland, if you read his testimony, testified it was the worst he'd ever encountered. He said there were holes in the road the size of toilet bowls, only not as deep. He said the washboard was so bad, he had to move to the oncoming traffic side of the road to drive over there because it was a little better over there. He said it was so bad that he couldn't even take his eyes off the road. That was his excuse for driving over the delineator post, was I didn't see it because I had to keep my eyes on the road. I asked him, do you want this jury to believe? This is in the transcript of the trial. Do you want this jury to believe that you thought that road had been repaired when you encountered, because remember, his father had warned him, and he was looking for detour signs, and he hits this washboard. You want this jury to believe that you thought that road had been repaired when you got into that washboard? His answer was, up until that point. That's his answer. Now, the jury could infer from that. He decided at that point it was no longer repaired. If it's no longer repaired, he knows there's a washout. That's assumption of the risk. He's aware of the danger. His father's warned him about it. Now he's gotten into the washboard. And it's so bad, he can't even take his eyes off the road for a second. But he did see. He did see that delineator post. He says he did. So there's no question it was there, it was in place, it was reflecting, and he saw it. The instant he came down, there's a little rise right where Robinson's driveway is. It goes down, and then it goes into a flat land where the water was washing over. We have different testimony about how far that was from where that washboard started until he hit the washout. Sometimes I confuse those, so forgive me. So Stensland testified that was like 900 feet. That's his own testimony. The highway superintendent said it was like a mile and a half. So he had anywhere from 900 feet to a mile and a half after reaching the conclusion in his own mind that this road hadn't been repaired to come to a stop. And he didn't. Now, instruction number 26, Mr. Morris referred to, he has to have a duty. There has to be a duty. What duty? To be contributorily negligent. What duty did he violate? Instruction 26 tells the jury, everybody's got a duty to operate their vehicle in such a way that they can avoid an accident. So that was an instruction number 26. But they also were instructed, I think it's 17, the standard instruction on negligence. Doing what a reasonable person would do or not doing what a reasonable person would not do. I submit that the jury decided he knew what he was getting into, and he took that risk. And how could you miss that delineator post? Well, his excuse was, I thought that marked the edge of a culvert in the ditch. Well, then he drove right over it. Had to be driving in the ditch, and he says he was on the opposite side of the road from there. The jury was also instructed on credibility, and they were allowed to determine whether he was telling truth. He was telling some other things that were hard to accept. For instance, he broke his left knee in this accident. And in a medical record, the next day, he went to receive medical care. By the way, that evening, did not call anyone for medical care, did not call anyone for law enforcement, even though there had been this terrible wreck, injury accident. No law enforcement was called. And didn't call the highway department to report this unmarked washout that was such a danger to the community. Nobody was called. So next morning he goes, gets medical care up in, I believe, Bismarck. And in the medical record, the doctor writes that the very day before the accident, he had hyperextended his left knee, the one that was injured in the accident. Okay? So I'm cross-examining him about that. We're talking about damages now. And he denies it. Oh, no, I never told the doctor that. I never said anything like that to the doctor. Well, why would it be in the report? The jury could consider credibility. There were several things like that. I had a list of them. In any way, the jury was allowed, they were instructed on credibility. They could discount any testimony if they chose to, and that was their option. They were instructed on common sense. Don't have to throw that away at the courthouse steps when you come in. They were instructed on that. We had the road closed sign that was inspected daily. Yeah, it didn't comply with the MUTCD. I contend, and it's on a notice of review here, MUTCD does not apply to a road that's not built using federal aid. That's a South Dakota statute, and that's a notice of review issue that I raised. Had the delineator post right in the middle, had to go around that road closed sign to get where you got, hit a washboard that was so bad he could hardly drive. Victoria, his daughter, the passenger in the car, testified, yeah, maybe he didn't exceed the posted speed limit, but she was scared.
Going back to the issue of duty, even if the MUTCD didn't apply, the county still has a duty to sign and repair under statute.
No argument.
So you don't have any question that that there was a breach of, or that there that establishes a standard for the county.
It establishes the standard, and that's why I raised it on the notice of review, is if you choose to remand this and we try it again, I do not want the jury instructed that the county was negligent because they didn't comply with the MUTCD. What the county what the instruction should be is the county has a duty to place signs of sufficient height, width, whatever, 31.28.6, or that would be the standard. No, that's there's no argument about that. I'm just saying that the 31.28.11, I believe, is the one that says that MUTCD standard only applies to roads built using federal aid. And Mr. Morris stipulated in this case, it's in the appendix, that this road was not built using federal aid. So that was an issue we brought to the Judge Eckrich before the trial, because we wanted to know how we were going to instruct the jury. Because if the duty was the statutory duty, that would be one set of instructions. If it's the MUTCD, well, that's a whole different issue. And then I had to know if I was going to argue that this barricade complied with the MUTCD, I'd been laughed out of court. So I was forced to concede that it doesn't. Whether it complied with the statutory standard or not would be a jury question, but it wouldn't be negligent per se. Coming out of in my opening statement, I've got to admit my client's negligent. That's a tough place to be on the defense. So we needed to know that ahead of time, so Judge Eckrich was asked to rule on that issue ahead of time.
Your time has expired. Thank you, counsel. Oh,
thank you.
Mr. Morris, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. In Badao versus Hall, 756 Northwest 2nd, 554, this court said where the defendant admits a violation of a safety statute, negligence per se is established and the issue of liability should not be submitted to the jury. All the county employees admitted that the statute was violated. They admitted that the manual was not followed. Counsel for Harding County admitted that the manual was not followed, admitted that the manual applied, and said this case is about Ryan Stensland's responsibility. So throughout this case, the county admitted it was liable because it violated the statute. When we get to now arguing to the jury under instruction 18, I had the additional burden, which should not have been placed on me or my client, to prove legal cause for the accident. That was prejudicial. I'm in Harding County in the Northwest Territory of South Dakota. We're on a rural dark road in rural South Dakota. I am suing a county because they have a statutory obligation which they failed to meet, and because of that, my client was injured, incurred $47,000 in medical bills. I have to try that case against Harding County, in Harding County, with a jury made up of taxpayers. All we wanted was a fair trial, and we didn't get that because there was additional burden placed on me contrary to the law and the representation of my client. There was additional burden, and Mr. Knudsen wants to talk about the facts. I'm talking about the facts that are not present. Where is the duty, the statute, the ordinance, or the common law that indicates that if you see a washboard or you experience a washboard, there is a dangerous hole on the road in front of you? There is none. And I resort back to the Johnson versus Armfield case. There was allegations of speed. And in that court, in that case, Armfield's bare assertion that Johnson must have been speeding or he wouldn't have pulled out onto the street lacks evidentiary support. There's no evidentiary support in this case that my client was speeding, that it had anything to do with the accident.
Counsel, turning to this question of assumption of the risk, what was the exact nature of the warning given by your client's father to him that evening? Did he say there is a washout, there could be a detour? What did he actually tell him?
I believe, Your Honor, and I'm paraphrasing, but my recollection is the testimony was my dad said the Ralph Road, there had been a washout. Don't know if it had been fixed yet. Look for detour signs. And there's no dispute that he looked for detour signs. And, you know, maybe that's the irony of this whole thing. If his father had kept his mouth shut, we wouldn't be in this situation. Because that's what the county is saying. You knew there was danger there. Well, in context, well, I didn't know there was danger there. I was looking for detour signs. And if there are no detour signs, I'm put in the position that I can proceed safely. Well, if this county had followed the MUT and put up road closed ahead on a type 3 barrier, road closed on a type 3 barrier, and had properly barricaded the washout, we wouldn't be here either. So it was the cause, the proximate cause, was the county's failure to communicate as required by law. Mr. Knutson talks about fleeing from a lion and ran into the bear. I don't get it. The guy is driving down the road in the middle of the night, and there's no signage. Now, Mr. Knutson talked about when Mr. Robinson and my client was going back toward the west, they saw the sign on the ground. That was in a pickup in the westbound lane, and the sign was down. My client is traveling in the eastbound lane, and there was no sign. So it had to be on the ground. It couldn't have been up, because the guy's not going to drive around a sign or drive over a sign, and there was no evidence that the sign was up or that he drove over it. The only evidence is the sign was laying on the ground, and it would not have been laying on the ground if it was on a proper Type 3 barricade. Period. And I know Justice Severson, you mentioned this, the directed verdict. I know we're faced with that issue, but when you look at the fact that we had the additional burden of legal cause, which we should not have had, you look at the fact that there was no evidence that there was a breach of duty under a statute, ordinance, or the common law of my client. And then you look at it that my client is the jury considers assumption of the risk. There's a total prejudicial error about this case in the context of this case, because I'm trying the case to a Harding County jury that's made up of Harding County taxpayers against Harding County. And so the prejudice is huge when the burden is on me, when you have this, the county the whole time admitting that they did not follow the law, period, whatsoever. Now they want to come in and say, we didn't follow the law, but he should have known by washboard roads that there was a danger lurking ahead. And he should have seen, and he did see, the delineator post. Well, the delineator post, and what's ironic is they're relying upon the delineator post as being notice. Nobody knows how the delineator post got there. The county said, we didn't put it there. Mr. Robinson said, I didn't put it there. So how it got there. But when you're driving down the road and you see a delineator post, that means that the road is on your right and the road is on your left. He drove right over it because he went into the washout. The last thing in the context of prejudice, if washout roads are an indication that danger lurks ahead, then, in my opinion, that's bad law. There has to be a standard that is pointed to that my client failed to comply with, whether by statute, ordinance, or common law. And now, as to, I'll briefly address, my time's running out, the notice of review. I did admit that there's no evidence that the road was built with federal aid, and I was ready and willing and able to admit that because it doesn't mean anything. The statute the county relies on is 312811. It states, on any street or road constructed with federal aid, the location, form, character, or informational regulatory warning signs, curb and pavement, or other markings shall conform to uniform national signing standards. It doesn't say if it's built with federal aid, then the MUT applies. It said any street constructed with federal aid. It's not a condition precedent for liability. And I think this is a red herring. And I believe it was the Kyle versus DeSmit Township or the Fritz versus Howard Township. Very similar case, but it was against a township, and they conceded the MUT applied, and there was no evidence that federal aid was used. Our basis for our liability is 313210 and 312806. There's nothing that requires in those statutes that the road be built with federal aid before the county is liable.
Thank you. Your time has expired, counsel. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.